This podcast was recorded on Thursday, March 24th at 12:02 p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like media outlets will actually name the people at First Energy who are accused of leading the massive bribery scheme.
Wait, it actually happened.
Yeah.
Thank God. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly quest to be as thorough and all-knowing as those new cameras that will be recording redistricting computers. Very thankful that is not my job personally. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Ann Fisher, sitting in for Mike Thompson today. Coming up, more on the latest shoe to drop in the First Energy scandal. And our Snollygoster of the Week award goes to two wannabe tough guys.
Yeah, emphasis on wannabe there. Mm-hmm. But first, those computer-trained cameras I just mentioned, it is one of the new changes by the Ohio Redistricting Commission's apparent mission, unless they're being snollygosters here, to have more transparency and bipartisanship. They couldn't do much worse, I guess, but they do honestly seem to be trying to improve the process.
I guess. The commission has hired two outside consultants. They're University of Florida professor Michael McDonald and National Demographics Corporation president Douglas Johnson. They'll work with other members to draw districts that can hopefully, after all this time, finally get approval from the Ohio Supreme Court.
You probably know the story at this point. The Supreme Court rejected the commission's first three maps as being illegally gerrymandered to favor Republicans. On top of these new computers, the commission also has some new rules.
All of the map making will be done on those computer screens with no materials taken off-site. Racial data cannot be used by the map makers, and mediators will be used if there's not a consensus among commission members.
Going to go out on a limb now and say there will not be a consensus. And again, Ann, I don't think you could get much worse than the process they had in place. It was approved by voters several years ago at this point to make the process more transparent and bipartisan, and it had not worked.
They just ignored the process that was set forth.
And then they claim that there's this, that they have to hurry up, and that there's this crisis because they can't have the primary on May 3rd, a completely self-created crisis, as Maureen O'Connor said.
They could have been putting in place these rules and processes even before the census figures came in last summer, late, which is the thing that started to push everything back.
Right.
But really, so much of this bureaucratic stuff could have been taken care of even before the numbers were provided to do the job.
Yeah, it truly is a self-created crisis. And this is not a math problem. We say that a lot. It's a political problem.
Right.
The math, these districts can be drawn. You can fire up a computer software and crank out a dozen maps, probably nearly instantaneously, but they act like it can't be done.
They keep saying it's really, really hard to do. Well,
that's their job.
Yes and no. And yes, it is their job. And how they do it and the transparency has been pretty abhorrent.
Yeah.
Up until I guess now, but I'm not sure what we really see when I watch a computer working. I don't know about that.
God, can you imagine? I'm so thankful that there are cameras doing that.
There is a watch channel somewhere.
Yeah, before this, it was up to the caucuses really that were the GOP caucus was handling this before it came to the commission, and they would just present these maps to the two Democrats on the commission, Vern Sykes and Alison Russo, and they'd be like, "Whoa, hold on a minute," and then they could blame Democrats for not proposing their own maps, which had a snowball's chance in hell of passing this GOP-controlled commission anyway. So it's just...
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder that... I think Alison Russo's been doing a better job of using the bully pulpit. Before, I just kind of wondered why they weren't making more noise about being shut out. But by the way, so was the Secretary of State. So was the governor of the state shut out of the process in the early iterations.
Yeah, and then they approve the maps because they say that's the only maps they have. And, you know, Frank LaRose, in particular, pleading to lawmakers to push back the primary is almost laughable. I mean, when he votes for these maps.
Right.
And then he's like, well, I didn't have a job. Okay. Whatever. Getting to these new consultants, they are Michael McDonald, as you mentioned. He has worked on elections and as a redistricting consultant or expert witness in other states, including Ohio. He also apparently has some ties to one of the lawyers who sued Ohio over the gerrymandered maps that started this whole thing. And also the other consultant, National Demographics Corporation President Douglas Johnson. What a title. He previously had his expert testimony thrown out in a 2019 case out of North Carolina after he admitted some of the data he presented on behalf of Republicans in that case was incorrect. So we're off and running with our two consultants.
Right, and there's going to be objections to them.
Yeah.
They, again, were just brought on, for most of us, out of thin air. All suddenly, they've got these expert, they've got these experts, consultants. Why they couldn't have brought them on earlier is, I think, a good question. And then, of course, there will be objections to them going forward.
Yeah, they were hired without objections, but they mm-hmm. will, I think you're certainly right that there will be pushback against, hopefully, them trying to drag this process back to the middle. And we'll see what happens. Also, two mediators brought into this process. Do you think this will help? I mean, it seems like it will. It seems like it can't
hurt. The
bottom
line is, what's the map going to look like?
Right.
It goes back, what's the fourth iteration of the map going to look like when it goes to the Ohio Supreme Court? That's what matters.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the court determines that it's now been properly and legally apportioned, whether it's the legislative seats, which is the first thing we're talking about, the state legislative seats,
right.
I should say, state House and state Senate seats, and then going forward into the congressional districts.
Yeah, it's a sticky wicket here because the Supreme Court feasibly can make the congressional map. They cannot do that. They're precluded from doing that by the Ohio Constitution when mm-hmm. it comes to the legislative maps. Anyway, mapmakers have until March 28th, next Monday, that is coming up pretty quickly, to have these new maps in place. Put on your prediction hat here. Do you think they make it?
I honestly, I think they could make it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I would have thought, it's shocking that we're on a fourth iteration. It's clear what the voters wanted back in 2015 with the state legislative maps and what they wanted in 2018 with the congressional maps. And it's clear for some reason that the redistricting commission has failed until now. So I don't know.
Yeah, we're almost into April.
Yeah.
Either way, we'll be right back.
You're listening to a WOSU Public Media podcast. Everything you hear is funded by listeners like you. Become a member of WOSU Public Media today and support digital content like Snolly Goster and the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast. Make a gift at WOSU.org.
Welcome back to Snolly Goster from WOSU Public Media. For nearly 2 years now, we've constantly heard about the First Energy scandal, right? First Energy. We've heard a lot about lawmaker names thrown around as well. That's most prominently former House Speaker Larry Householder, who's under federal indictment related to that scandal. But not that many private sector employee names.
Until now. Attorneys representing First Energy investors always follow the money. Now say former CEO Chuck Jones and Senior Vice President Michael Dowling were responsible for the company's role.
Yeah, in case you've been under a rock since 2020, which honestly sounds kind of nice. I wouldn't blame you. Prosecutors say a dark money group called Generation Now funneled some $60 million to Householder and his associates at the time for their efforts to pass the nuclear power plant bailout law, which would have sent First Energy more than $1 billion in ratepayer subsidies to help prop up nuclear and coal-fired power plants. Those subsidies have since been repealed.
Lots of people suspected Jones and Dowling, especially Jones, who was fired in October 2020. But we got a little bit of closure this week when attorneys for First Energy investors pointed the finger at them. They had to. They were required to by a court. Mm-hmm. There's almost certainly more to come. As I say, I'm always waiting for the next shoe to drop in this.
Yep. Stay tuned. It might not be the sexiest pandemic milestone, to be honest, but this week, for the first time since 2019, Governor DeWine delivered a State of the State address.
In public, in the Ohio House.
Yeah. The last two were canceled because mm-hmm. of the pandemic.
These things are mostly largely symbolic. The State of the State always seems to be strong. But there are nuggets of news. DeWine's new goal, for example, of beefing up the mental and behavioral health care system in Ohio. He wants to increase research and innovation, increase better crisis response efforts, add more treatment services. A lot of this has to do with bolstering Medicaid.
Yeah, here's what he said on Wednesday.
My friends, the system isn't broken. It was just never fully built. And it doesn't exist everywhere in Ohio yet.
He also wants to follow a commission's recommendations in increasing state funding for police training when it comes to guns, which we've heard a lot about recently. He threw some red meat at fellow Republicans in supporting a bill to increase penalties for convicted violent offenders who use guns to commit crimes.
Now, it's a small group of the criminal element, but we must target them and we must remove them from society. Now...
Right. Red meat is one way to put that. It went over mostly well. It's obviously it's a Republican-controlled Ohio General Assembly. One thing that was not mentioned was the continued drama over redistricting, and that stuck out to Democratic Representative Terrence Upchurch.
I was shocked that that wasn't mentioned. I mean, this process has made it hard for, you know, folks like myself that don't know where they're going to be running and when to start campaigning and where they're going to be campaigning.
Either way, love it or hate it, even if you don't really care about the address or anything DeWine said, it was nice to see the governor speaking to a joint session of the House and Senate again since before COVID, the first time since before COVID.
Yeah, it was. It was good. And he did it in the State House, by the way, which was a tradition abandoned by former Governor Kasich, you know, during his tenure.
Yeah, we were trying to, just off the cuff in the newsroom the other day, name all the places where he had the address.
As far away as possible.
Steubenville, Marietta.
Lima.
Yeah,
I think Lima.
I think Lima too. I couldn't remember where else, but
as
yeah,
far away from the state.
I mean, completely seemingly random. I mean, lovely places. They're all, you know, they're Main Street USA, like a lot of towns in Ohio. But
it was difficult for reporters to get there, for
yeah,
a lot of people to get to those places, and you know, in the middle of a busy work week.
Yeah. So either way, a good sign, hopefully, that the pandemic easing, mm-hmm, and again a joint session of the House and Senate for the first time in 3 years. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week, which we use to honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. And I can't say for certain, but I think this is the first time in our podcast history that it goes to two people.
That's so exciting. Two white males, Mike Gibbons true. And Josh Mandel, who apparently think they're in an old John Wayne movie, or at least that's the shtick they're using to try to impress voters. I don't know. They went toe-to-toe in the lamest possible way last week when they acted like they just might come to blows. They were like chest-to-chest, mm-hmm, sort of, after Gibbons said Mandel had never worked in the private sector.
You've never been in the private sector in your...
All right, gentlemen.
I've worked, sir.
Josh. Squat, Josh.
Two tours in Iraq. Don't tell me I haven't worked.
You don't know squat.
It's okay, right?
You don't know squat.
Two tours in Iraq. Don't tell me I haven't worked.
Back off, buddy. You're gonna die.
You back off.
Oh, come on. Never. That'll happen.
But sit down.
Never.
Watch.
Yeah.
Watch.
All right, we've heard enough of that. Anyone watching these two weenies honestly knows they were never actually going to fight. They were playing a part, trying to out-conservative each other. It's dumb. But it got a lot of attention, and it probably worked. You will probably see this pop up in their own campaign ads saying that they are the only candidate that will... quote, fight for you. I can see it now, Ann. During football games at that in the fall, guaranteed.
I can see it too.
Assuming one of them wins the primary.
Yes, exactly. And Gibbons is leading, and Mandel was the leader before, but it's still behind them a big cluster.
As tired as I am of their shtick, I'm almost equally tired of Jane Timken saying she is a mom on a mission and saying that she put 150,000 miles on her car. The multi-millionaire Jane Timken can buy a new car with the change in her ashtray. So take it easy on the regular mom stuff, Jane. Either way, that will do it for our show this week. If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, you can email it to us at snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, please give us a good review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcast. Big thanks to Ann Fisher for filling Mike's seat this week. And for our digital producer, Michael DeVonis, I'm Steve Brown on Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.